Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and with me, as always, is a man for whom every day is a Thursday, Ryan Gutowski. How are you?
It gets confusing because I get ready for Friday. I've got my Friday pants out. I've got my Friday shirt out. I've got my lucky hat. And then I wake up like Groundhog's Day. It's Thursday again. I never get Friday.
Well, you've really just got, like, your calendar is just, like, one long column.
It is.
Like, your calendar is ridiculous.
It is. I live in this weird dimension where it's just Thursdays. So
it's always Thursday.
Every time I get in the elevator at work, they're like, hey, looking forward to the weekend, right? And I'm like, I wish.
And then you burst into
tears. I start crying hysterically. So bad.
Yes. People will not ride in the elevator with you anymore.
It's an absolute nightmare. So.
Understandable. So, Ryan, I'm back.
You are back. You have come back from the great land of Spain. Spanish. Is that?
Yes, Spanish is what they call it locally. No, they don't. Sarah and I went to Spain. It was my spring break last week, so we headed out there and toured a few cities. I actually got to go to a board game cafe out there. On our last day, it was also my birthday over the that week. So Sarah, in being nice to me as part of my birthday, let us go to a board game cafe, which was really cool. And it was actually packed; it was crazy. But we posted some pictures from the Instagram feed, so you can go check that out if you didn't see that.
Yeah,
you lovely listeners.
Yeah, so Instagram.com/oneboardfamily. You can check that out. So how did it work over there? Is it pretty much the model that we see here in the U.S., that you sit down and pay a table fee, or is it hourly, or how did that work?
We paid €3 to play, €3 each, and they had a bunch of games to choose from. And you just grab one and you play it. And they actually had a little bit more food options than I've seen at other places. We got there somewhat early. Spanish culture, you really don't start eating dinner until 8 o'clock or later. So like they would, we adjusted for jet lag and all kinds of stuff, but our stomachs never adjusted to eating dinner, not until 8 o'clock. So we were like starving and they were like, sorry, the kitchen doesn't open till 8. And we're like, fine. And as soon as it hit 8, we were like, waiter. And they were like, it's going to be 20 more minutes. So we're like, we will murder you. But they ended up taking our order a little bit early and we got some food and played a couple games. But
I guess you answered my question. I guess my kids are never going to Spain then. So.
Yeah, that would not work, that late eating time.
Yeah, like at 5 o'clock, they're like, oh, I need a snack. I'm like, you're going to eat in 45 minutes. No, I need a snack. You're going to eat in just a minute. And then they eat at 6, and then they eat at 9, and then they, right before they go to bed, they're like, oh, I didn't have a snack. I was like, you had 2 apples and peanut butter. Yeah, that was a snack. Can I just have some Oreos? No. So, yeah, that would never work with my kids.
We did a bunch of, like, pre-meals and stuff, and that's a cultural thing, too. But, yeah, I'm glad I'm back to where, you know, I can eat dinner at 6 o'clock and not feel ashamed.
That's good, yeah.
What have you guys been up to, sir?
I will shame you at 6 o'clock. I'll call you every day at 6 o'clock and be like, oh, you're eating dinner? For shame.
Yeah. For shame.
We've been doing okay. I have been very sick. It's been fun all weekend. I was able to stay in bed, get up a couple times to play a couple board games, and stay in bed some more. So that's about it. It's been a pretty uneventful weekend. And as you can tell, I'm still dealing with this cold. So hopefully I'll get over it soon. If not, I'll permanently be voice disfigured like this. It'll be great.
Voice disfigured, yes.
Voice disfigured.
I like that phrase. Yeah, the hope is that you, like, make disgusting sneezing and coughing noises at least 43 times during this episode.
I got a lot of sneezing out just before we hit record, so we'll see how this goes.
We'll see how it goes.
You're really excited about the prospect of that, though, which is sick.
You did get to sneak in some gameplay, even though you were sick. So what was something that hit your table recently?
Yeah, so actually tonight we actually just finished up. We were spending some time with some folks from church, and we played a game, By the Rights. And essentially, By the Rights is a game about pitching movies to your friends. It's a party game, so it's not going to be everyone's style game, but I really love it. And it's funny because about 3 years ago, a friend of mine, so Aaron and I, we would be sitting there as we're getting ready in the morning on a weekend, and I would say, okay, here's the title of a movie, who's in it? And we would have this little running joke where I would get her to pitch like pieces of a movie to me or something. Or I'll ask her for the plot. And we'd do that back and forth a couple years back. And so a friend of mine and another guy, we were sitting around at an IHOP one day, and we were doing this, pitching movies based on, here's the assets that you have, what movies are you pitching? So I produced this game called The Producers. It was just I prototyped this game called The Producers. It's essentially the same game that we are now reviewing called By the Rights. And so this game, By the Rights, is basically a movie pitching party game. And so you are given four different types of cards. You're given a genre card, a descriptor card, a hero card, and a plot card. And then in the box, there's some money cards. And these money cards are actually, each round there's going to be a producer. And that producer will be the one who gives money to the different people. So in a game, let's say you and I and Aaron are playing this game, Aaron's the producer, I would pitch my game, and I've got a genre. Okay, maybe it's a drama, maybe it's a comedy, maybe it's something more obscure like a high school drama, okay, or something that's more pinpointed. And then you've got a descriptor, and that descriptor can kind of tell the type of movie, the feel of the movie. So it could be dark or it could be deadly, those type of descriptors. And then you've got a hero, which tonight I had one. Mall Cop was one of my heroes. So of course I had Paul to Blart. Do a Paul Blart Mall Cop number 3, which was which was a drama. And then the plot card that I chose was about a person who had short-term memory loss. So Paul Blart, the mall cop, fell in love with this woman who ended up eating Kung Pao chicken in the food court every day of her life because she had this memory loss. She didn't know that she had already eaten it the day before. And so Paul Blart...
See, I thought the short-term memory loss was the fact that everybody forgot that there was a Paul Blart mall cop too.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's been etched into our mind, so we have to go with number 3. But... Well, number 3 is very much a serious movie. So really, Kevin James really plays on his skills. Anyway.
Question mark.
Yeah. So By the Rights is a really fun party game, especially for people who are creative. This is essentially the game that I've been playing informally at a dinner table for years. And I have prototype for in my drawer of prototype stuff. So I'm really excited that we're going to be reviewing this. And if you're looking for a really fun party game with creative people, if you have people who are really into movies and theater and stuff like that, man, By the Rights is really good. It's kind of that creative spark that you need for a really cool game night with some funny people. So I love that we're reviewing this, and very much a fan of it.
So you're not like crying as you're playing it going like, I could have done this. I did do this. Like, this is my,
we played with our family. This is made by Literally Wizards is the name of the company.
Okay.
And so
are they Literally Wizards?
Apparently. That's their name.
Oh, there you go.
And so that's how they did it. They went back in time. No, I'm just playing. So it was funny because we sat down as a family. My parents were in town, and we sat down as a family, and we start playing this game. And Aaron looks at the cards, and she says, are you serious? I was like, what? And she said, this is the game you prototyped like a couple years ago. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And she was like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, Okay. The difference was I had three different categories instead of four. So, but I'm sure if you look over Kickstarter, there's probably 100 people who are doing have the same idea, you know. So, I'm just one brain anyway. So, but it's a really
No,
fun game.
I say that you're three brains, and that's something
I'm
that
like a cow.
gives you superpowers. Yeah. You're like a cow.
Cows
Yes.
have like what, three stomachs? Yeah,
Yeah,
I have like
except yours is
three
brains.
brains. Anyway.
Yeah. One of them's behind your knee.
Ugh.
Well, anyway, yeah, it sounds fun. I like that kind of genre of games. I don't get together with the people that could play that all that often. I've got a few games though that I hang on to that I'm kind of hoping, you know, one day I'm able to break out
Yeah.
and be able to make up some ridiculous
Yeah,
things.
this is totally dependent on the players that you have, because if you have people who are not creative or can't think on their feet, this is not the game for you. This is
Oh yeah.
you will freeze up. Erin, actually, she struggles with it because she doesn't think some of her ideas are funny enough or big enough. Because I have such a crazy imagination, I get a couple cards in my hand and I have a plot and a script written out in 10 seconds, and I'm like super excited about it. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Not that I have ever experienced that on any Will It Game episodes
Yes,
ever.
you
That's
have.
never happened. Never
So,
happened once.
what you been playing?
Well, one of the ones that I finally got to while we were at the board game cafe in Spain was Raptor. That's one that when we first started One Board
I
Family,
love
you brought up a
Raptor.
few times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't really talked about it on the podcast, and it's been a while since we've brought it up. I had it on a list of games that I'm like, I want to get my hands on this, and it went out of print and then it came back. But Raptor is a two-player game in which one person is playing as the dinosaurs, one person is playing as a group of scientists, and you're both competing against each other. Now, one thing that was kind of interesting about it is like, so if you're the scientist, you're trying to capture the babies, like you trank them and then you capture them, or you're tranking the dinosaur. And if you're the dinosaur, you're trying to es get your babies to escape, and you're eating all the scientists. And while it is just a board game, like part of it, I was like, dang, this is intense. Like when the raptor runs around and eats your scientists, you're like, wow, they are dead. I don't know what it was
Yeah.
about it, but like it just, I was like, dang, this is intense.
That's funny.
It was, each person gets to get their own little deck of cards that has numbers on them, 1 through 9, and they each also have a special power. And on a turn, both players put a card down secretly, flip them over, and you're able to, whichever card is the lowest, that card's power takes place, and whichever card is the highest, you subtract the high number, the low number from the high number, and that's how many action points they get. So it's a cool little strategy of, am I wanting to take my action because they are pretty powerful at times, or am I really wanting to get my actions so that I can actually do the things that are needed in order to win the game, like move your scientists or your dinosaurs around, you know, shoot your gun, different things like that. It was I had a really good time with it. Sarah was the dinosaurs and I was the scientist. I ended up winning kind of by a stroke of luck of being able to block her last little baby dinosaurs
Oh,
from
wow.
being able to escape. But it's interesting in that I thought some of the powers are really strong, and I thought that things were going to happen really fast. And you do end up where we had a lot of scientists get eaten really fast. There was a few dinosaurs. I captured two of them really quick at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
But like then it kind of slows down and becomes very methodical when your last few pieces start to kind of sit around, because it kind of isolates things to just one little area of the board. And just some of the powers are really cool. Like the dinosaur has a power where you have a big raptor that's got a lot of power, and then the baby raptor as well. The big raptor can disappear off of the
Yeah.
board, and then they get to put it back wherever they want, or they can use a special power to call all the little baby dinosaurs to their square of their little area of the board. The scientists can use fire to kind of shut off different areas of the board, and stuff like that. So it was fun. I had a good time with it. I want to play it again, reversing our roles. Yeah. But I don't know if I was so blown away that I want to buy it now.
Yeah,
I think it's one that I enjoyed playing, but it might not be one that I purchased.
I will tell you that when Raptor was new for us, we played it a lot, mm-hmm. but I haven't picked it up in over a year. And so, which is sad because every time I see Raptor, I'm like, dog, that's a good game. And I think it's so good because it's very, very well balanced. I've played as both Raptor and as Scientist, and it feels like I could do this. I could win on either side. And there are times when you feel trapped. You know, I remember playing one time against Josiah, and Josiah just tranquilizing my Raptor over and over because I just could not get away. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I can get these babies to escape. I don't know. But you feel against the ropes, and then you start eating the scientists, and then you're like, okay, I'm back in it. And so it's a really good game. I put it up there with, if you're looking for a great two-player game, because it is only a two-player game, it's right up there with Santorini in my mind. I just wish I took time to play it more.
Yeah, and it's asymmetrical, which is kind of different for a two-player game. That doesn't happen all that much. And so it gives you that option of, you know, being different things. You know, one game that we've got an asymmetrical game, Fugitive, which is a Tim Fowers game that we've played a few times, that's pretty fun. And I think because we don't bring that to the table enough, if we played that game a lot and, you know, then, you know, we're like, we really like this kind of mechanic, then Raptor might make it to the table. But I think right now I want to hold off on that one. But it's good. It's good. Like, don't get me wrong, I think people should go out and grab it. But I know you and Bob have been playing a game that I actually have played a little bit as well, and that is Wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah, so Wisdom of Solomon, I wanted to get a couple games in before I talked about it. I've played it 3 times now. Man, Wisdom of Solomon is really, really good. Wisdom of Solomon puts you in Israel during the Old Testament in the building of Solomon's temple. And so it is very cool to see this map of Israel to the right side of the board with all these different areas that you are building. I think they're called exchange houses or commons houses. I'm trying to remember the term for it, but basically these little market houses along the side of the board on the map. But you're on the left side of the map, you're actually using worker placement to place your specific people in different places. So build part of the temple or get resources or go to the market and buy and sell resources. What I like about it, and what Bob told me early on, was that the economy in Wisdom of Solomon is very tight. There's not a lot of room. You know, sometimes you can play a game and you can just produce so much gold, you're just sitting there like, I've got all this money. Right. I've got all these things that I can do with. Well, everything's very limited. And so once that resource is gone, it's gone. And so if you're sitting there, you're like, I really need 2 gold, but you are hogging all the gold. I have to wait for you to sell it. I have to wait for you to use it. I've got to wait for you to turn it in for a certain perk. It's really good. And then it gives you this hard decision of visiting, going to one of these holy locations, which give you a end of round perk. And basically the way that works is you are having to allocate all the workers that you have to that location in order to get that. And only 2 people are allowed. We played 3-player games all 3 times we've played, but you allocate workers to that area and only 2 of those can be taken during that round. So you can basically jump in. One of the ways that I used one of those resources in one of the games that we played was I saw Josiah had a ton of resources in front of him, and I was so resource limited on my side, I went ahead and sacrificed a bunch of my guys, finished out my round to split his resources in half and take half of them, which devastated him, but it put me in a great place going into the next round.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, worker placement is a mechanic that's been done several times. And so it's, you know, in order for you to stand out, you've got to have something that makes you different. And I think, you know, Bob was talking about that, like that mechanic of limited resources. And yeah, it keeps you, forces you to be creative with your strategy. I played the game solo. It's got a solo mode, and I don't do that often, but if I'm trying to prepare to be able to teach it to people, that's something I do sometimes, so I know the mechanics to be able to teach them well. And it was fun. I mean, it's got the, it had like a draw bag that kind of told you what the opponent was doing, like your simulated opponent.
Yeah.
And the different actions that they would take, and that was pretty cool. And I think it might be the Holy Realms part, but like the part where you're building a map and like connecting different areas to earn more resources is also available. Am I remember that correctly?
So you've got the temple, which as the temple is being built, you're taking these blank tiles off to reveal pieces of mm-hmm. the temple, but each of those blank mm-hmm. tiles is worth victory points. So for that's
but there's also the map of Israel that's on the right side as well.
So the map of Israel, that's where you're actually building out those exchange houses. Which is a really cool mechanic. I think that it does a great job of taking all of these different elements and putting them in a game, and it makes sense. It's not overwhelming. It can be understood by a new gamer, but there's a lot of strategy to it. As you're putting those common houses, what's cool about that, and it's something that Bob and I have not seen in a game before, is the way that you link those houses, those facilities. You put one there, and then you can link it using this bridge almost, this road tile. Kind of like think of the little wood pieces in Settlers of Catan. You're going to put that in between two areas on the map of Israel. And you're going to be able to get resources from two different areas. And if you do a good job of mapping out those commons houses, I really wish I remember the name of what those houses are. When you do a good job of laying those out, you can get some crazy, crazy resources. I mean, there was one point where I think Josiah or Bob placed one of their people, and because of the way that they mapped it out, they ended up getting like 7 or 8 resources, just stockpiling them. And I'm like, wow, that's how you get this to work really well in your favor, and then make a big turn next turn.
Yeah, it kind of gives you some engine building in your worker placement.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing we wanted to push, you know, was that, like, it does have a biblical theme, but please don't let that kind of keep you from trying to game out.
Yes.
Like, it is a good game, and so hopefully people will check that out. And I believe it's available now through the Fun Hill Games website and on Amazon and things like that.
And we'll be doing a full review because, actually, Bob and I have both played it. Bob played it at a board game meetup here in town because somebody did the Kickstarter. We got a review copy and you got a review copy. And so we are actually going to probably just combine forces to do a review for this game because
super review,
because it is a great game. I will be the first to tell you, I am not a fan of the artwork, but I think the mechanics are so solid that you've got to look at the artwork and say, listen, I can be forgiving because they put together such a solid game here, and I'm not going to knock it so hard because it's not like you've got barely there mechanics and bad artwork. You've got great mechanics and artwork that is just not there yet. You know, and while I'm probably the biggest critic of art on One Board Family, I am giving it a bigger pass because of how well the game plays.
Speaking of art, Ryan, while I'm doing this next one or introducing the next one, I want you to Google it because I want you to look at the artwork of this game while I talk about it. Everybody listen for the click clacks as he's typing up stuff.
Myself, so
don't mute yourself.
Okay,
they need to hear the
click
clacks. Okay. It's got to be real. What the game I wanted to talk about was Habitats, which I played way back at Atlanta Gamerama. You there?
For Humanity. Habitats.
Habitat. No, just Habitats.
Jimmy Carter started it?
No, Jimmy Carter did not. No, stop. No. That is not what we're talking about. We're talking about Habitats.
The natural home or environment of an animal, plant, or other organism.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I've got to get you to stop Googling things. I should have said Board Game Geek. God, I got to know better. I have to give very specific instructions.
I don't know how the internet works.
What is this thing?
Okay, go ahead.
So Habitats is a game that was put out in 2016, and basically it's a tile-laying game where you are building essentially like a little zoo using tiles that represent forests or plants and animals in the different environments. Now, Ryan, when you look at this game, what do you think when you're looking at artwork and some of the stuff?
Let me ask you a question. There are little glass or porcelain figurines in do those come with it?
Yes.
Are you serious?
So one big part of it is these porcelain or ceramic little figurines.
Weird.
And yeah, they're also like, they're kind of odd. They seem almost, some of them, like a combination of animals. The one animal that I played with was a crayfish, which, you know, I can't do in any other game, I must say. And so the way that it works is like the tiles that you have to choose from are kind of all laid out in a little grid that changes depending on who, how many people are playing. And on your turn, you can only move forward, left, or right. And so you can only get like three options of tiles as you're going through. And then you take those tiles and place them in your own little build, and you're trying to score the most points that you can. And different animals need to be next to different things in order to score points. So like a duck needs to be near two consecutive water tiles and a pasture tile. And then there are like plants can get you points. There are watchtowers that give you certain points if they're aligned in a certain way. There are different entrances and exits you can add that can get you points. It was an interesting game. Nothing blew me away about it. I have to say, like, I was playing this with my friend Melissa, and I can't remember who else, and they were in love with this game. They love the figurines. They love the artwork. I personally think I really, really, really don't like this artwork. I think it looks super cheap. Like, the backgrounds on these tiles, like, for a duck, it's just bad blue water. And then the duck's artwork and the icons for the locations that need to be on there, they don't match. Like, they look like nature-y drawings, almost kind of like a Wingspan feel. And then the icons are just kind of cheesy looking, and then the backgrounds are so dull. Like, I can't stand the artwork on this game. And then the figurines were a little weird. Some of the way the rules work were not very clearly explained on the, like, the iconography on the tiles. Like, I had a rough time with this game. I won the game as we were playing, but I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And it was a very weird gaming experience, but I must say, like my friend Melissa loves it and is totally looking for a copy to add to her collection now. So I don't really know what I was missing out, but this is not one that I wanted to have my hands on.
Well, I think this goes as one of those, not every game's going to be a hit. You know, there are some games that do connect with, like, your friend Melissa and her friends. They really enjoyed it, but it just was not a hit for you. You know, I think back to all the people who say that, I was listening to Shut Up and Sit Down recently, and they were talking about how great Decrypto was. And I liked Decrypto, but I wasn't blown away by Decrypto. I didn't sit there and like gush over it or say I need to buy it. I was like, if I got it for a gift, I would probably enjoy it every once in a while. But I wasn't blown away by Decrypto. And so it's like that just doesn't do it for me. And so just happens. And just like something like By the Rights, I just got done talking about how fun and creative that game is. If you're not a creative person, you don't think like in movies and don't think about scripts and in that vein, that you would be miserable playing that game.
Know? Yeah. And I think, it's like you were talking about being critical of art. I like good art. I usually don't mind bad art. Like I was getting grumpy looking at this art. I was like, this is so bad. Like, I don't understand, with these backgrounds and the way it's set up, I was like, how did this get published? And the figurines are cool, but like, sort of, it doesn't fit. Their style doesn't fit with the art style.
Yeah.
And the cover of the box doesn't match anything at all. Like, it was just crazy. I don't know. It was weird.
Well, we're about to go into the topic of the show, which kind of, we're going to talk a little about this disconnect and kind of, we'll see you on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about it as our topic of the show comes around. Okay. We'll see you in just a second. So the topic of today's show is to back or not to back.
That is the question.
What brings us to spend money on Kickstarters? And you just finished talking about Habitats, which the art was, I don't want to say repulsive to you, but it drew you away from enjoying the game. And I would say that's one of my biggest detractors from a Kickstarter project. If the art is not of a certain level, I find it very, very, very hard to back the project at all. It could be the most well-playing game in the world. It could be critically acclaimed, and the art could be hot trash. Somebody who just came out of art school and found out what Adobe Illustrator did 3 weeks ago, and they were the illustrator on this game. If that's what it looked like, there's no way I would back it. It's something about, I would almost wait. If it was that great, I would wait for them to release something with better art, and I'd rather wait than put something on my shelf that I would hate to look at, but have to explain to people, it plays really good. I really struggle. That's probably my biggest why not to back something on Kickstarter.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of Kickstarters are starting to understand that.
Yes.
And, I've seen with a bunch of, as time has gone by, that a bunch of these Kickstarters put a lot of effort into the artwork, even like into prototype copies, like making sure that not just the artwork for the game, but the artwork for their covers and the artwork for, their demo videos, like that it looks visually appealing. Is there anything that's kind of stuck out to you recently that you're like, dang, that artwork is good, or man, that artwork was bad?
Yeah, well, I think any of the art that Mr. Cuddington is doing, every single project that they work on, it just is so good. And you can tell from the style of the video content to the artwork on the front cover of the box to the illustrations on the card. It's all so solid. And so it's like, I want to back stuff like that. You look at, for me, a trusted publisher would bring me to the table to back a Kickstarter. So when I think about trusted publishers, I think about 25th Century Games, and I think about some of the stuff that Chad's doing, and it's really good. I feel like there's always this progress of it keeps getting better and better, and it's worth spending the money on the art, Keymaster Games is another one. Like, every time I hear about a Keymaster Games release coming to Kickstarter, I'm like, I know exactly what that's going to look like. It's going to be high quality.
Yeah, I mean, it's making sure that there's kind of this difference between like the big publishers and the small publishers. And, you know, with big publishers, I don't know, like, do you get excited about like minis and stuff the way that a lot of people do on Kickstarter?
Not at all. In fact, before we were recording, I saw a release from a company where they were, I won't name what the release is or the company, but they put out a press release this past week, I guess last week, about a new game that's coming. And I said, oh, I like the art style of that. Let me click it. I clicked it, and the very first thing that I see of the press release is a couple miniatures for this game and some cards. And I was like, mm-hmm. I think I'm good. And like, I scrolled down a little and I was like, yeah, they feature the minis like twice in the press release. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I think I'm good. And I clicked out. I'm done. You know? And there's nothing in me that says I need more chunky plastic stuff that I'm never going to get around to paint. And I know mm-hmm. I'm probably the minority, honestly, because there are people who the more miniatures they can get, the better. They fill a box full of plastic figures and they will pay you hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous. Like there's a game that's on there right now that I've considered backing. It's called Crimson Company. And by the time this gets released, there'll only be a few more hours left in the campaign, but it's a card game, but there's also a version that you can buy that has three 3D printed castles. And there are some other differences, but like it's not a huge difference between the price. It's $6, but like for me, I'm like, I don't need those.
Yeah.
Like I don't need the extra plastic. There's nothing really about that really stands out to me. Like there's very few games where I'm like, yeah, that, you know, 3D piece made it worth it. Like, and usually the first one that pops into my mind is Colt Express, and that's not even 3D printed.
Yeah.
That's like cardboard, you know, stuff. So yeah, I think that's something that doesn't stand out to me. And I think that's related to like my number one thing for Kickstarters, and that is the price.
Yes.
I am interested in backing games that like, I think have really solid mechanics, especially if it's a mechanic I haven't seen before, or that I think is a mechanic that has been polished very well, like Space Explorers from 25th Century Games that came out recently, and Fire in the Library from Weird Giraffe. I thought those were mechanics that have come out before,
yeah.
But they're well polished. But also those things have to be in my price range.
Yep.
I think the biggest money I've ever spent on a Kickstarter was for Dice Hospital, and it was a little over $50, and it was because I was really excited about it, but like I haven't brought it to the table yet. And that is something that I can generally say happens with a lot of my Kickstarters, is they go on what we call our shelf of shame. And so I'm not going to spend a ton of money on something that, you know, might be sitting off to the side for a while and that I could possibly get used for cheaper. One game that, you know, has been advertised on my Facebook feed recently is a game called Lord of the Cords, which is a game that is $40, but then I think $10 with shipping to the United States, so $50. And what's inside the box, for the most part, I'm counting up like 120 cards. And to me, like, I understand it's custom art and all that stuff, but I don't want to pay $120 or for $50 for 120 cards. Like, that feels too much. And then, like, the upper tiers of stuff add on more cards to the game, but, like, it's $65 for one. And then, like, their biggest package, which, again, it's cards and a few other things, but it's $212. That to me is not something I'm going to spend my money on. I really want to make sure that I'm getting bang for my buck and that I'm getting, you know, a pretty good experience for the price.
That's right. I'll tell you that the first time I ever spent over $50 for a Kickstarter project was relatively early on when I started backing Kickstarter games on Kickstarter, and I've played the game three times, And I think every 6 months it comes to my mind, do I sell it or do I keep it? You know, because I feel like I overspent on it. And I feel like although I love the theme and I love the concept, it just it's not going to hit the table very often, you know? And I feel like I overpaid for it, you know? And that's not true of all Kickstarter projects. There are other things where I've paid and I've been like, the amount that I get out of that game is tremendous. You know, I think about Campy Creatures. I've played Campy Creatures 30 something times, you know? I think originally that game was like $25, maybe 29. I mean, I've definitely made that was well worth the price through Kickstarter. And I was happy with that project. I was happy with the final results. And I think it has to do with the art, the gameplay, knowing that I got the value out of it. And I think the longer that you spend time looking at Kickstarter projects and backing things, you start to realize what you will and won't get to the table. And so bang for your buck is definitely a big one. And this is my voice slowly going out, by the way.
Oh, Ryan, it's disappearing.
Man.
We'll miss it. We'll miss you.
I'll have a robot sub in for me next week.
Yeah. Just get Josiah to come finish up the episode for
That's
you.
Right. Yeah.
No one will notice. Or Kendall.
Kendall sounds just like me. So,
yeah, we've been worried.
But
about
yeah, it. So yeah, I don't know. I think everybody has to look at Kickstarter projects and say, is this going to be worth my money? And you know, those are the things I wanted to have the conversation because I was thinking about this week. You know, why have I slowed down on backing stuff on Kickstarter? Last year, I backed a lot of different things, but then this year, I'm being very, very cautious. And I think it's because I know the things I'm going to be able to get to the table. I know the projects I want to participate in. And I don't have, you know, you and I have talked about this both on the show and off the show. I do not have the finances to back all the cool stuff. I see people out there that back 70 games on Kickstarter each year. There's no chance financially we would not own a house any longer. It just wouldn't
we'd
be
have
a thing.
To sell a child.
We would have two instead of three kids. But it just doesn't make sense. And so Kickstarter is a luxury for our family and not a must or a must have.
Right. Ryan, quick question as we wrap up. Have you ever bought a higher level tier on a Kickstarter campaign before?
I'm trying to think. Yes, I have. Yes. Tiny Epic Quest and Tiny Epic Zombies. I actually went for the deluxe versions of those.
Ooh. Yeah. What makes you want to go for a deluxe version versus just a regular?
The price difference in those was very small. I think it was between $3 and $5. It had a little additional content and some extra pieces, I believe, if I'm remembering them correctly. That's really and I feel like Tiny Epic Quest more than Tiny Epic Zombies because I've played Quest more often than Zombies. I feel like I've gotten my money's worth out of it. And it was worth those extra couple of bucks.
Definitely. Well, yeah, and you know, obviously our experiences may be different than yours, depending on if you've got a little more disposable income or maybe
Yeah,
you're
definitely.
Even more hesitant than us. If you haven't tried out a Kickstarter before, it can be daunting. I know when I share with people that, you know, a board game that I want costs $50, that blows their minds. And maybe you're like that too. You know, it's however you want to approach it. Kickstarter has been a really great thing, I think, for the board gaming industry. And we've been able to see some really cool things come out of it. But yeah, definitely you got to be careful with it. It can be easy to jump in and try to, you know, fund as many things as you possibly can, but you got to be careful and make sure you're staying, keeping, you know, treat it just like you would a store
Yeah,
and make sure
definitely.
You're only buying those games that you know are going to get to your board gaming table.
That's true. I definitely don't want to look over at my shelf and be like, oh, I kickstarted 50 games and I have played 10 of them.
Well, and I think we'll probably be talking about our shelves of shame in a future episode.
That is true.
To talk about how do we avoid, you know, once we've made all these Kickstarter mistakes, what do we do to make sure we bring them to the table?
That's right.
But for now, Ryan, we hope that you guys have enjoyed the episode. If you want to find out more about us, we're all over the place on the internet. Check out Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, our, you know, a MySpace. Maybe we'll load
we'll
up
have
one of
MySpace,
those.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll do a live journal, maybe perhaps a Zanga.
Yeah.
We'll do all those things. But yeah, just look for One Board Family on your favorite, social media platforms and you'll find us. You can always head over to oneboardfamily.com and check us out there. And hey, we hope you've subscribed to this podcast, that you're not just rocking one episode at a time. Go ahead and subscribe and check us out, especially our Will It Game episodes. We've had some great episodes in the past few weeks that have featured some pretty big names, and we've got a big one coming up next week.
That's right.
That we think you'll all really enjoy.
We just had Amari Akil on the show from Board Game Brothers and the creator of Rap Gods, which is super cool. That was such a fun episode. So,
yeah, you kicked my butt. So while you're also kind of checking those things out, you can also consider being a Patreon supporter. You're, you know, helping us out with a little bit of funding, helps us to do a better job with what we do with videos and audio and going to places and getting all kinds of content. So we hope that you're able to do that. But hey, we're glad you listened to this episode. You made it all the way to the end. You deserve a pat on the back and maybe a cup of coffee.
There we go.
Enjoy yourself.
Treat yourself.
Have a great week. Treat yourself. Ryan, you feel better by next week. And
thanks,
until
man.
Next time, we will see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.